back to the bin.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Back to the Bins. I'm Paul Spataro, and I am once again joined by my good buddy, my buddy pal, Mr. David Pascarella.
Just marvelous to be here with you tonight.
It's marvelous to be here. It's like Billy Crystal, just marvelous. Yeah, it's always fun. Glad to be back with you. And I'm just looking. I ended up on an Apple Podcast webpage, and I saw Back to the Bins, because if you recall, we had to create a new feed on Apple.
Yes.
And on that feed, there's only two reviews. So if you listen to this show, if you like this show, please give us reviews. That's how people find us. That's what makes the show jump out at people. So please consider giving us a review. If you don't like us, please forget that I mentioned anything about this review. So how are you doing tonight, Dave?
Not bad, not bad. What's new? Anything new and exciting?
Nothing new since the last time we spoke.
Yeah.
And for those of you who don't know, and none of you but Dave and I would know this, but we just recorded an episode, and now we're recording another episode. So it's literally been 2 minutes since the last time we recorded.
But still, you know, we could have some banter here.
Well, you know, I hope that people appreciate, and I by appreciate, I just mean understand and think, okay, that's cool. That we really do put in effort sometimes to make sure that we get you a show every week. I don't remember the last time we missed a week, honestly, except for when they were, technical issues that kept the episodes from coming up. And even then, they were on the
website.
I had them on the website. I had them on the website then, so they weren't showing up on certain podcatchers, but they were still on the website. So I don't remember the last time we missed a week. So I hope people enjoy it. I hope we're not putting in this effort and people don't care. But
so I was looking at these, you know, I collect those Superpowers figures from McFarlane. And it looks like they've reached the end of the line with that. And they've come out with now these larger scale Super Friends figures. Have you seen these?
I've heard about them. I have not seen them.
They're nice looking figures. I would be interested in maybe acquiring the Superman-related ones. But you know what the problem is with McFarlane? Everything is an exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just go online and buy these things. I mean, some of them you can, but then to get a complete set, you have to go hopping around all over the place or pay a scalper a ton of money. It's just a very bad business model, I think.
Yeah, well, it's probably making them money, but it's not consumer friendly.
I don't see how it makes them money, though. You know, if you happen to catch it in Walmart or Target or wherever, whoever's got the exclusive, it's the same price. But it's a matter of finding that variant.
Mm-hmm. Well, but by making things rare, you can increase the desire to have it. So
I guess
it might do it. You know, I had an interesting thing yesterday. One of my my buddies who is into collectible retail, he's got his online business, and he messaged me about somebody selling the Sideshow Mutant Leader, which is from the Beneath the Planet of the Apes, the underground mutants.
Right.
And I said, well, I don't have any of that line, so that's another rabbit hole. My Sideshow collection is just the James Bonds. But then I remembered that I have the Lawgiver statue. So that, you know, that came into our conversation. And he says, oh, that's like the most rare one. He said, that goes for like $500 online. It's like, really? Because my wife bought that for me a few years back for Christmas, and I'm pretty sure she paid something like $50 for it because I had seen it in the store and pointed out, oh, that's cool, I like that, and then she bought it. And I'm pretty sure it was only like about $50 back then. So then I said to her, you know, I relayed this to her last night after we had the conversation, and she's like, well, why aren't you selling it then? I said, because the same reason I had it in the first place. I didn't have it because I thought it was going to be worth a lot of money, and I'm not selling it because I think it's worth a lot of money. I had it because I like it.
We're what you call
I like it.
We're what you call collectors.
But my thing about collectibles is if I don't like it, I'm not going to get it. I don't care right. If it's cheap, if it's, you know, I mean, I could see saying, okay, you know, I don't like this, but it's worth 20 times what I could buy it for, so I'm going to take it and turn it over immediately. But if I have it and it's on display, it's because I like it. And I don't want to get rid of my stuff.
Exactly.
Why don't I start selling your stuff then? I'm going to go through your jewelry and see what's worth more than what we paid for it.
Everything. The price of gold is through the roof.
Yeah, there you go. Why aren't we selling all of that?
Think of all the lawgiver statues we could buy with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, really. You know, you got a good point there.
Yeah, once in a while.
So why don't we get to some books? We may have a short show today because we are doing two in a row, and I get tired easy. I'm an old man.
Well, since I have the older book, would you like me to start?
And you have the Marvel book, so usually we do Marvel and then DC.
Okie doke. I'm bringing to the table this week Tales of Suspense, number 57. This is cover dated September of 1964. Sale date, June 9th of 64, for a whopping 12 cents. The writer is Stan Lee, art by Don Heck, letterer Sam Rosen, and edited by Stan Lee. The title of this is Hawkeye the Marksman. The issue starts with Iron Man saving a worker at Tony Stark's weapons factory from a vat of molten steel that was accidentally tipped toward him. Only we know that Tony Stark's personal bodyguard, Iron Man, and Tony Stark are one and the same. Happy Hogan asks Iron Man to speak to Tony Stark about putting in a good word for him with Pepper and helping him to get a date with her. Clearly, this is a long time ago, and this is frowned on in today's workforce, so just a little note there. Later, as Tony Stark sheds his Iron Man disguise in his private office, he thinks he shouldn't feel jealous when Happy tries to date Pepper, since he doesn't dare get serious with her, due to the conditions of his life. When Tony tries to suggest the idea to Pepper, she jumps to the conclusion that Stark wants to go on a date with her. Happy sees the two of them and leaves before Tony can rectify the situation. So he reluctantly agrees to take her on a date. They go to visit Coney Island because Tony secretly doesn't want to go to a place too romantic. They walk by a marksman, being sneered at by the audience. Shortly after, the flying pinwheel ride loses control, endangering the lives of the people on it and the bystanders alike. Tony excuses himself, claiming to have to make a call to the factory, and suits up as Iron Man. He puts the full power of his armor against the flying pinwheel and stops it. From his stand, the marksman observes with jealousy how Iron Man is getting everybody's attention. Once he returns to his home, the archer uses his basement workshop to make a costume and customized arrow tips. He becomes the costumed adventurer, Hawkeye. So people will never again sneer at his performance. Although Hawkeye has no superpowers other than unfailing accuracy at target shooting, he can do whatever others can by means of his arrows. After leaving the workshop, Hawkeye uses one of his trick arrows to pull himself up to a rooftop where he witnesses a thief stealing jewelry. He uses an arrow to immobilize the thief to a post and then ropes down to the street. However, the thief manages to escape while Hawkeye is descending, but he leaves his loot behind. While Hawkeye's inspecting the stolen loot, he's spotted by two policemen who mistake him for the thug's partner. Hawkeye decides to flee, thinking the cops would never believe he's innocent. While running, Hawkeye is stopped by a car, whose driver lets Hawkeye get in to escape. The driver is none other than the mysterious, villainous Black Widow, who captivates Hawkeye with her beauty. As they drive to Black Widow's hideout, she praises Hawkeye and tells him he might be the ally she needs. They arrive at the hideout, and Black Widow leads Hawkeye through a lavishly furnished estate until they reach a stairway leading them to a laboratory. Hey, everybody's got workshops or laboratories. Hawkeye sees that he could use the equipment to build stronger arrowheads and asks the widow what she needs. Now that he's captivated by her charm, Hawkeye is easily convinced to go up against Iron Man. Meanwhile, in Stark Industries, Iron Man is changing back to his civilian identity. Regretting his behavior towards Pepper, he decides to step up his game and take her out to a glamorous dinner. Stark is starting to realize he has feelings for Pepper. However, when he arrives at his office, Happy is asking Pepper for a date, and she accepts in order to show Tony that he's not the only fish in the sea, and out of resentment for that horrible date to Coney Island. A short distance away from Stark's factory, Hawkeye uses a suction cup arrow to jump into a van approaching the plant. Once the truck passes through the guarded gate entrance, Hawkeye gets off and pulls himself up to a rooftop. He starts using explosive arrows to catch Iron Man's attention. When the Golden Avenger confronts Hawkeye, the archer uses arrows tipped with a chemical that quickly rusts Iron Man's armor upon impact. Our hero is forced to flee, leaving behind the rusted parts. By the time Hawkeye reaches the spot where Iron Man had been, he finds only the discarded armor parts and decides to steal them in order to learn the secrets of Stark's tech. In another section of the plant, Stark gets his hands on an emergency armored duplicate, but it's missing its right boot, and he can't go on without being exposed. He finally finds the boot, which had been left in another area because it needed replating. Now he's fully armored, and Iron Man goes after Hawkeye, having heard a car speed away a few moments ago. He sees only one car on the road, racing away from the factory, and smashes the living daylights out of it with an intensified blast from his power ray. Hawkeye is forced to exit the crashed vehicle. He discovers he has run out of rusting fluid when he confronts his opponent. Iron Man easily repels Hawkeye's attack with a magnetic repulsor ray, and he tries to power dive onto his enemy at top speed. However, Hawkeye uses an arrow that expands into nylon rope strands and tangles Iron Man up. After Iron Man breaks free, he follows Hawkeye to a pier, which happens to be at the edge of LaGuardia Airport. Iron Man hits the pier Hawkeye is standing on with such strength, it breaks, causing Hawkeye to fall into the water. The Golden Avenger retrieves his enemy and leaves him lying on the floor. Foolishly, he turns his back on Hawkeye in order to retrieve the stolen armor parts from Hawkeye's car. Hawkeye, faking being unconscious, fires his most explosive arrow, a demolition blast warhead, at Iron Man. To Hawkeye's surprise, the demolition blast ricochets off Iron Man's armor while still knocking the Golden Avenger down. And it also ricochets, hitting the Black Widow, who was on the pier waiting for Hawkeye. Fearing that his beloved was fatally injured, Hawkeye carries Black Widow to her boat, and they escape. Iron Man recovers from the staggering blow and decides to give chase. However, the fog gets thick, and he remembers he's at the edge of LaGuardia Airport, deciding not to go airborne, as it would be a menace to planes taking off and landing. Due to the fog, Iron Man can't recognize Black Widow as the woman ally of Hawkeye. After returning to his factory, Iron Man changes back to his civilian identity of Tony Stark and decides to trudge through the beach outside the factory because he has nothing to do but wait for morning.
So you're saying he has nowhere else to go?
He's got nowhere else to go.
I got nowhere else to go. I got nothing else.
It's life on the edge for you. Once you've been to Coney Island, it's all downhill from there.
I grew up right around there, so I used to go regularly, and then I don't anymore, so I guess it's all been all downhill since then.
That's it. You were at your peak, your pinnacle, and it's on the downward slope, as is it with me.
I recently saw this issue in a comic store. I think it was when I was in Savannah last year. We went by a store and I saw it, and it was exceptionally beat up, which in and of itself wouldn't keep me from getting it. But it was exceptionally beat up, and it was also exceptionally expensive. When you make that combination, then it could keep me from getting it. You know, I guess first appearance of Hawkeye, you know, it definitely is a key issue and has some value. It's interesting to read this one with the perspective of this is his first appearance and what has he become since then? You know, where is the character gone? I guess, you know, the part of the you know, the lore of Hawkeye is that he started out as a villain and became a hero. But I like the way, you know, reading this for that perspective, that he wasn't trying to be a villain. He didn't immediately say, oh, I'm going to use my skills to steal money or whatever. You know, he was actually trying to stop the guy from robbing. And, you know, there was a little contrived that he couldn't just say, hey, you know, I stopped the guy, you know, whatever. But, you know, and then it was the allure of the Black Widow. You know, one of the things that I am not a fan of is, you know, he met her and then 3 minutes later, she's by far the love of his life. I'm not a big believer in love at first sight. I believe more in lust at first sight. And then sometimes that'll turn into love over time. But I don't believe in love at first sight, because how do you know? You don't know anything about somebody's personality when you first see them. Anyway, that's just, you know, Paul on life. I did see, you know, if I can just find the section where it was almost a little silly. The dialogue that Hawkeye's giving, it just was not what he eventually would be, because he was kind of a regular guy. And I'm looking for where the dialogue that kind of bothered me was. I think it was when he first meets up with Iron Man, or perhaps not. There were some points where he almost seemed to have heavy villain speak in his dialogue. And I guess, you know, when Stan and Don Heck created him, they weren't necessarily saying, hey, we're going to turn him into a hero down the line. So I guess, you know, having him speak villain speak a little bit makes sense. But just the same, although I possess no superpowers other than my unfailing accuracy at target shooting, I can do whatever others can do by means of my arrows. I don't know, that's not really that heavy-handed, but it's not the way people talk, especially he's just talking to himself. You know, you see the way he's drawn on that page when he's first putting together the costume and everything. He's got kind of the squinky eyes so that, you know, he, you know, is looking a little less heroic. Yes. Then later, you know, he becomes one of these guys that when he's in his civilian identity, if you put him, Steve Rogers, and Hank Pym next to each other, you might not know which one was which.
Get out the template when you draw him.
You know, looking back on this, you know, again, taking it in perspective as to what they probably were thinking when they had him come out there, and then, you know, what he eventually became, it's pretty cool to read this just for that. You know, this, I guess, you know, we could have probably just done an episode on this like we did recently with the Green Lantern issue, but, you know, we're going through this, I guess, much quicker. I am not, nor have I ever been, a big fan of Don Heck's art. I really don't like the way he draws faces.
Yeah, but it could also be part of the time period, too, you know? It's not as sophisticated as what comes later.
Yeah. Oh, I just found one piece of dialogue that made me kind of say, huh. So, what a thrill. I feel as though the destiny of the entire city below me is in my powerful gloved hands. Now, first of all, again, not the way you expect Hawkeye to speak. Second of all, he doesn't have gloves on.
But I mean, his whole concept that he becomes a villain, basically, he's working in Astroland or whatever it was called.
Nellie
Bly, whatever it was at the time. He's a trick shot with an arrow, almost like a carnival. And he becomes a villain because people aren't taking him seriously as he's wearing a costume, shooting arrows at balloons. Right? That's why he's going to become a villain.
That's why I would become a villain.
All he needed with that
dialogue. Take me seriously, Dave.
All he needed with that dialogue you just read was to end it with the Lex Luthor laughter from the Super Friends.
Now, how familiar, other than what you've seen in the movies, how familiar are you with Hawkeye?
I read through the first couple of years of the Marvel Universe, so I know he becomes a good guy. You know, without having seen the movies, I knew that.
Right.
So I'm a little familiar.
They give him a little bit more depth as he goes on. You know, first they have him being kind of the wise ass who's giving Cap a hard time in the Avengers. And then, you know, it's kind of revealed that, you know, he's being a wise ass, but he has total respect for Cap. And then eventually he becomes like a good leader himself, you know, leading the West Coast Avengers and the Thunderbolts at one point.
Yeah, I didn't get that far into it.
You know, they marry him off and to Mockingbird, and then I believe they get divorced.
So is the character he's married to in the movie supposed to have been that character he's married to in the comic books?
No, I don't think so. They actually had the character Bobby Morse, who's Mockingbird. They had her on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And interestingly, played by the same actress who was in the pilot for a Wonder Woman TV series that didn't get anywhere, Adrian Palicki.
Yeah, that name is familiar.
If you ever saw the unaired pilot of Wonder Woman, which is out there on YouTube and stuff, then you'd see her in that. And she played the Bobby Morse, who was Mockingbird's character on that show. So if you, although I think they said Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was not in continuity with the MCU.
They changed, so, you know, originally it seemed like it was, then it wasn't.
Yeah, they definitely had some episodes where they were tying in. You know, they had a Sif from Thor on it and things like that. So I don't know. But that show was weird for me because each storyline that went on, it would start off very, very slow in my mind and I really would kind of lose interest in it unless I really forced myself to keep watching. And then by the end, it would become interesting. And then they'd start a new storyline and it was, you know, rinse and repeat.
Yep.
Because it would be boring to me again, or it would be uninteresting to me again, and then eventually it would get interesting.
Yeah, so I feel.
I didn't make it through that entire series, but I've had the desire to. I just haven't done it, so we'll see. I have a big long queue of shows that I want to watch that I know my wife would have no interest in. That's on that list, and those are the things I watch when I get on the treadmill. So. I'm getting through things. I'm watching stuff, but there's a big long list, so we'll see. Right now, I'm watching Strange New Worlds.
Excellent.
So, any more thoughts on this?
No, I do not. Should we rate it?
Go ahead and rate.
I would say that the cover is something that might suck me in. You know, especially you're clearly introducing a new character and you're giving him enough publicity that he may have some legs at some point. The art is, you know what it is? It's the concept. It's the executions that's not so much. And I'm going to attribute that, as I said, the art of the style of the time. You know, it's an interesting concept. You have this Arrow guy attacking Iron Man, which it doesn't really seem like it's a good fit, but it does raise some curiosity of what the plot's going to be of this. But the actual art itself, I think, despite the cutting it some slack for the art of the time, I don't love it. I got to be honest with you. I picked the book, but I don't love it. I'm going to give it the art on the cover. A C minus. I really don't like it. Hawkeye looks all right. Iron Man, to me, not so much. And there's so much, you know, writing on the cover. It's just too much for me. The interior art, yes, it's the art of the time. And on the inside, I feel I can accept it more. It's a better quality than the cover anyway. Serviceable. It goes with what's gone before. I would rate the interior art as a solid B. The story, you know, it's a little bit of a contrivance with why he becomes a villain to me. But it plants enough seeds with as far as I'd like to see where it's going to go. I've already seen where it goes, and I found it interesting. So the story, I'm going to give it a B. I'd like to see it play out. So for an overall grade on this, I give it a B minus for the introduction of Hawkeye.
All right, that's fair enough. I'm a little different from you on my rating. I think I like the cover. I definitely like the cover more than you do. The renderings are a little simplistic. I can't argue with that. But I like the way they're drawn overall. And I like just the layout. So I'm going to say a B minus on the cover. The interior art, I think it's pretty good as far as the storytelling and all of that as it goes along, but it's not really my cup of tea because I'm just not a big Don Heck fan. That I'm going to give a C. Although the cover is, I believe, Don Heckler as well, but whatever. The story, it's a little, you know, it's pushing things a little bit, I think, but it does the trick. I like the introduction of the character. And the biggest complaint I have is the him being head over heels in love, like 2 minutes after he meets her. So I'm going to give the story a B as well. And overall, I'm going to give the book a B.
Not too far apart.
No. All right. So I'm bringing to the table for this one a follow-up. If anybody listened when I did one of the Superman Score episodes with Blake Petey, I had covered Superman Wonder Woman number one, and I found it to be interesting. And I said at the end of that one that this is one I might want to follow up and read some more of. So I actually finally got around to reading issue number two, and I figured we might as well cover that. So this has a cover date of January of 2014. It is part of the New 52, which I know that in and of itself makes it something people bristle at a little bit. I found the first issue to be pretty interesting. So, again, I'm kind of cool with this idea. It's written by Charles Soule, or Soule. I don't know how it's pronounced, S-O-U-L-E. Penciled by Tony Daniel. Inked by Matt Banning and Sandu Floria. Colored by Tomeu Morey. Lettered by Carlos Manguel. Edited by Eddie Berganza and Ricky Purden. Some tough names to pronounce there. The synopsis is as follows. Having encountered a monstrous creature on a sinking tanker on the Norwegian coast, Wonder Woman is outmatched, hoping she can find its weakness. Her attempts are thwarted when the creature breaks her arms. Suddenly, though, the creature disappears before her eyes, just as a heavy wave smashes into the ship's hull. Fortunately, Superman comes to the rescue, lifting the boat out of the turbulent waters. Once safe, Wonder Woman admits she had never seen a creature of that sort before, and her description sparks a memory in Superman's mind. He takes her to the Fortress of Solitude, where he shows her a kind of window into the Phantom Zone, a Kryptonian prison where the worst criminals and those things too dangerous to live among the citizenry were sent. Searching, he picks out the creature, and Diana identifies it as the same as what she saw. He explained that this is Doomsday, and Doomsday is death. Despite his monstrous appearance, Doomsday is more than a monster. If he was able to cross into this world, it means the Phantom Zone may be weakening. If Doomsday were to escape again, Clark is concerned that he may not be able to handle him. Diana assures him that if he is to face Doomsday, he will defeat the creature because he will not fight alone. Diana and Clark visit to Mount Etna, where Hephaestus keeps his forge. Yeah, there you go. He has already given Diana enough weapons to kill 10 armies, but they have come to see Superman armed. After a test of his worthiness, Hephaestus agrees to build a weapon to their specifications, noting that he had once built a suit of armor for war of a similar description. Their discussion is interrupted by a visit from Apollo and Strife. They are unimpressed with their relative's choice of lover and begin to insult both Diana and Clark. Unconcerned for himself, Superman warns that if Apollo speaks to Diana like he did again, he will hit, and he won't have to hold back. Smirking, Apollo casually backhands Clark and sends him flying backwards. Elsewhere, Cat Grant struggles to get a hold of Clark, and upon failing to do so, schedules a date with her boyfriend, Aaron. Having landed in the molten metal of Hephaestus's forge, Superman emerges burnt rather than... Rather than allow Diana to avenge him, he takes the opportunity himself, slugging Apollo in the jaw. Angrily, the Lord of Olympus warns that he is the sun and emits a blast of burning sunlight from his eyes. He is amazed then when Superman appears unharmed by it. Given the nature of Superman's physiology, it only makes sense that such a blast would make him stronger, and it certainly feels intense. Rather than pummel Apollo and bring down the whole mountain in the process, Superman settles on launching him hard into the rock face. Elsewhere in the Sahara Desert, a caravan is torn to pieces by something they can't even see. When the dust settles, the only man who remains alive is he who committed the massacre. Zod.
Neil.
To be continued. And I am kneeling before this book. You know, I don't know. I you know, when I discussed this with Blake, he said the whole series was pretty decent. So I'm taking his word for it. That's why I even read issue two. If the whole New 52 was as good as this, I think it would have been a much bigger success than it was. I think there were a lot of hopes to kind of recreate the wheel with the New 52 and to do things differently. And I think a lot of that fell flat. This is doing it differently. Certainly having a relationship between Superman and Wonder Woman that they have here is very different from what we've seen for the most part. But there's also... I feel like the essence of the characters feels real here, which is a little different. You know, when I had read the New 52, like when I had read Action Comics and Superman issues, I felt like they weren't what I was looking for. This Superman feels about right to me, and so does the Wonder Woman. So like I said, I think if the whole New 52 was like this, I would have been much more high on it. Because when they first started the New 52, I think I read almost everything. And then I quickly petered out. I don't know about you.
I have this in my collection. I bought it off the stands at the time. I read all the Superman stuff through to the end of the New 52. The problem I found with it was they wanted to give it a fresh new start, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't have the nerve to restart everything.
So they kept Batman and Green Lantern where they were, right?
They kind of chugged along. And even with Superman, who was supposed to have been, you know, reborn or whatever you want to call it, there were things that had happened in the past. You know what I mean? That they were accepting as part of, say, the timeline. And I think that Doomsday was part of that.
Well, as I said when we did issue one, I felt I really liked the threat of Doomsday, but I felt like DC kind of made it like, let's do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes away the specialness of it. And it also makes it that, you know, you got to make him... ultimately, you weaken him by having him around all the time.
He's a one-hit wonder.
Yeah. I think, you know, he needed to be somebody who only got brought out once in a blue moon.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's interesting that they brought him out in issue one of this series, and then he's, you know, he's obviously there at the beginning of it, and then he's gone. So okay. I kind of like that they didn't lean on him too heavily here. I don't know... what issue 3, 4, 5, 6, 7? I don't know what they have in store for us as far as Doomsday goes, but I kind of hope he's just on the periphery and that he's not a major threat in this storyline, because again, I don't like when he's overused.
I think you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, probably. Disappointment is my middle name. And I like the artwork here.
Oh, the artwork is great.
I you know, it's I'm sure it's got a lot of computerized effects to it, but it's very clean. It's easy to follow the story. I think it's exceptionally well done.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, I'm not a fan of this costume. I'm a traditionalist, but the art is fine. You know, it's fine. You know, the costume's a matter of taste. Wonder Woman's too, for that matter. I'm not a big fan of this costume, but the way it's drawn hits it out of the park.
Yeah.
My problem was with the design of Apollo, because I knew Apollo from Who Mourns for Adonis, and this guy looks nothing like Apollo.
Yeah, this I was a little thrown off by that character model that I didn't, you know, I don't recall ever seeing it look that way ever. But, you know, that's fine. I'm not I haven't read that much Wonder Woman over the years, so I can't say, you know, how he's been portrayed in the past. As far as Wonder Woman goes, I've made the white jumpsuit issues from the early 70s. Mm-hmm. I've made those the ones that I'm trying to get.
How hard are those to get?
You'd be surprised. They're not so easy to find. I mean, I've gotten a decent number of them, but, you know, there's some that are just ridiculously expensive, and I have to just keep walking by those until I see them at a decent price.
And it's and a decent amount, right? It's a fairly
It's about 30 issues, I think. Yeah,
almost 3 years.
Yeah, I've added like some short runs like that into my want list. Like I have originally I had just a Neil Adams, Denny O'Neill, Green Lantern, Green Arrow run. But now I've expanded that to make it the entire Green Lantern, Green Arrow run, which is probably runs about another 25, 30 issues after Neil and Denny stopped with it. So, you know, there's interesting runs for me to go after, as opposed to trying to get every issue. You know, trying to get every issue of Wonder Woman is not going to ever be on my to-do list. But to get the white jumpsuit issues, that's attainable.
Have you read any of them?
A couple, yeah. How old? But that's one. Probably when I pick up all of them, I'll go through them. They're all right. To me, it's more just kind of like a quirky bit of history to go after.
It's a niche.
Yeah. So, but I really like this story. I mean, it does have the, you know, the 2000s. Problem of, you know, I could pick this up and read this issue in about between 5 and 10 minutes and I'm done and ready to go to the next one, which it's surprising I haven't read the entire series just because of that. Just sit down one day and read it from beginning to end.
It's like six of these equal one issue from the old days.
Yeah. But I like, you know, the cliffhanger at the end with Zod.
I'm blanking on what it is with Zod, to be honest with you. I've read these. I don't remember what the deal was.
It seems like an awful lot to go into in the Superman Wonder Woman series. Like that this, you know, Doomsday and Zod, you'd think they'd be more in the Superman proper series, you know?
I think at some point there's going to be a crossover somewhat of the titles.
Yeah, maybe. I like that Zod is drawn with some sort of like a symbol, but it's not the Superman symbol, but it's obviously, you know, of the Zod family crest or whatever it is on his armor.
I think that concept they kicked off in the early 2000s, I think.
Well, didn't they do it in Superman the movie?
Everyone had crests, but I don't remember Zod having, because they wore those hippie outfits.
Yeah, but when they were on Krypton, didn't Jor-El have the Superman symbol on his
yes.
cloak? And then there were other people with other symbols on theirs, but not that same one?
Yes. They all had different symbols. Except for Zod didn't get a symbol. That's why he was pissed off. Maybe
that's why he was so upset.
He had chest hair he was going to show off instead.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, that was not whatever.
And my hopes are, and like you say, I may end up being disappointed, but my hopes are that they're not going to focus too much on Doomsday, that they will focus on Zod, but not only will they focus on Zod, but they'll focus on more along the lines of the you know, the Phantom Zone villains.
This book was pretty good for its duration. What did you say? It's like 20 something issues. Does it even make it 20 something?
I'll tell you in a second. It goes 29 issues. 29 and issues. Two annuals. So 31 total.
This is better than the other two titles. Better than the Batman Superman one too.
Batman Superman had an ebb and flow to it. It was all basically, I think, in 6-issue arcs, and some of them were better than others.
I think there's a point where neither Batman or Superman are in the issues.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
But these were pretty good.
But I do plan on continuing reading these, and I probably will only go over to the, action or Superman issues if there is an actual crossover.
And I think there's going to be one. I think there was one.
All right. And I know we're moving exceptionally quick here, but I'm ready to rate this.
Go for it.
So the cover is very, very busy to me. It shows Superman and Wonder Woman kind of at each other, having each other's backs, and they're surrounded by the Amazonian people. It's okay. Doesn't seem particularly special to me. It's well drawn, but I don't know that there's anything about it that makes me say, oh, I need to have this. The cover, I'm going to give it a B-. It's okay. It's not bad. Actually, I'm going to give it a C, because to me, even though it's very well drawn, it's average as far as its ability to pull me in and make me want to read it. So I'm going to say it's a C. It's effective, but it's average. The interior art I really like. I think that it's dynamic. It's well drawn. It's clean. It gives you a feeling for what's going on. It also gives you the storytelling as it's going on. I'm going to say an A- on the interior art. I really like it. The story's pretty cool. There's a couple of cool moments in it. It feels kind of cinematic. I'm going to say an A- on the story as well. And overall, I'm going to give it an A- despite the fact that the cover got a lower grade.
That's your prerogative.
It is. Well, sometimes the sum is better than the final grade is better than the sum of its parts.
Exactly. I like the cover. I have no idea who these people are when I bought this originally. For all I know, they could have been the Uber threat of the story. I like the positioning on the front cover. The coloring is good. I would have bought this partially because of the cover. Also, more importantly, because it's number 2 in the series. I'm going to give the cover a solid B. The interior art, I loved. I think it's dynamic. I think it's well drawn. I like to be able to look at something and recognize exactly what I'm looking at. I would give the interior art solid A. And the story's intriguing. The glimpse, we know who Doomsday is to the level that they know, or at least Wonder Woman knows. Not so much. So it's curious to see where it's going to develop. And the arrival at Zod at the end. The least amount for me is the confrontation with Apollo. To me, that was almost like killing some time in the middle of the...
But it was kind of a fun...
Right. Thing. It was kind of goofy fun, I guess you could say. You know, the meeting of her family. Who would think someone would not approve of someone dating Superman, right? Come on. Mm-hmm.
Takes all kinds.
Those reasons, I'm going to give the story a solid A as well. So for me, the overall grade on this book is an A-.
All right, so we landed in the same place.
You usually do.
So that'll do it for, you know, somewhat abbreviated episode, I guess. But I hope everybody enjoyed it, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old-fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@twotruefreaks.com or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiMonzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.